find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on Verbal Shenanigans. Cowabunga.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, everybody. Welcome on back to Verbal Shenanigans, the podcast. You have chosen your time to spend with me. Chosen to spend your time with. That's what I meant.
Well, I already know it's going to be a great episode. Just the way how you chuckled as you opened up the show, I could tell deep down you're like, oh, this is going to be an extra hilarious show.
I like to bring the hilarity, if you will, to the airwaves every Monday and Thursday. That's what we, or Saturday, or sometimes Friday, or you know, whenever the second episodes decide to get up there.
Yep. In the '80s, we brought the pain, and the 2020s, we bring the hilarity.
Yeah.
You know, we're older. You know, we just realized what we were. We can't bring the pain as we used to, so. Now we try to bring the ha-has into this universe.
The 2020s are just full of hilarity. I mean, everywhere you look, just everything's hilarious.
Everywhere I go, statues crumble for me. But that's because I live in the Confederate areas, but I digress.
Oh, God, I can't wait for someone to make a video with the what was that band? Mark McGrath's band? Sugar Ray.
Oh, Sugar Ray.
Of just statues falling with him, like... singing with his frosted tips. But yeah, I don't know. Everybody, welcome to the show. That's Mike. I am Scott, and we are approaching year 6 here, or 7, whatever the hell this is, of this show. So welcome to it, and we have a very, very cool episode for you today. At least a cool guest. I don't know about the rest of the episode, but we have a really unique guest here, but... I know, Mike. Go ahead.
I was just about to say, you're guaranteed a good 30. That other hour filler, sit back and relax.
And this might even be a shorter interview, so they're guaranteed like a good 15 today. Good.
Oh, okay. All right.
Guaranteed a good 15.
Yeah, you've been forewarned.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to keep the... I even texted you yesterday, like, let's keep it light and nostalgic today. And I don't know. I can't go complete lightness and nostalgia. Like, I don't know. I posted on Facebook last night, and this memory came back to me that I actually have, I don't know, I guess I blocked out for a while. But you know, reading Facebook posts and news and the constant police brutality stuff. I don't know. It reminded me of a time that I was kind of like harassed by the cops. So I figured we'd open with that. I don't even know if I ever told this story, and if I did, it was years and years and years ago. But somewhere around 2008, 2009-ish, I was going to a guy's house that he played drums in my band at the time. We were literally just going to hang. I think we were going to watch a baseball game. I think we were watching like Mets Yankees or something like that. We were going over, and I had,
when baseball existed. Continue.
Yeah, we'll get to them too. Maybe a little later in the show. Bunch of losers. And I was going to, I think we were going to watch a game, and it was dark, and I had gone away that I wasn't really completely used to going from my old house. So I was going through Perth Amboy, and I had turned my high beams on to try to find this street. Like, it was like, and this was, you know, 2008-ish was a little before like your GPSs were like perfect. I remember having like the Tom Tom or whatever, and that thing was never like 100% reliable.
Oh yeah, the ones. I mean, number one, the cushion that's supposed to stick to your windshield always found a way in the summers to just come loose. So you're spending most of your time like holding like your cell phone, and half the time you can't figure out what's a street and what's a river on those things.
Yeah.
I mean, they were never, and heaven forbid, they change the name of a street, because nobody was able to, like, I think you had to hook it up to your computer and then like update download it. To update. So nobody was doing that. So
right,
anything over 2 years, you were just SOL.
Yeah. I wonder how many individual like businesses cell phones have put out of business, like all the things that cell phones do now that used to have a separate device to do. Between cameras and video and music and MP3 players and everything else, and they're all gone. Anyway, so I was going, looking for this street, kind of going slow, like you're probably stopping a lot and squinting at the signs, you know, like to try to find the cross street. And I turn down a side street, and all of a sudden the lights go on. Whoop, whoop, you know, the red and blues, if you will. And you know, if you, I'm sure you've been pulled over a couple times, right?
Well, of course. Yeah. We had the famous the People versus Michael Berlew episode way back when.
Yeah, so we could refresh that too. But so you know that there's an instant panic that goes with being pulled over. You could go be going 15 miles an hour and know you did nothing wrong, but immediately, you know, the car pulls over. You're nervous. You're nervous about getting in trouble. You're nervous about, oh, did I do something? What did I do? I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to pay, you know. And so this guy, I remember him being very young, comes to the car, and immediately he's like, it's not like window down, you know, roll your window down. So I had the window down, and it's immediately flashlight, like, in the face. Like, you know, like, right in the face. Like, oh, you know, like aggressive right away. And I'm like, oh, hey, sir. I remember him being very young. I remember even thinking then, like, wow, this guy's a lot younger than me. Like, he looks like a teenager, kind of very baby
straight face. Out of the academy kind of kid.
Exactly, baby face kid. And so he immediately is like, license registration ball. I'm like, okay. And I give it to him, and he's like, yeah, blah blah, where you been? I'm like, oh, I'm going to a friend's house. And I think I was going towards Mattawan or somewhere around there in New Jersey. And he's like, license, where are you going? Just constant quiet, where are you going? Oh, I'm watching it. Where are you coming from? Why are you coming this way? Now, like Perth Amboy is a very Spanish neighborhood. So maybe I stuck out. I don't know. Okay. Maybe, but there's so far literally no reason to what I'm thinking is to pull me over and kind of be aggressive about it too. Like right away, the tone is not like, hey, you know what you were doing. It's more like, you know, what's going on here? Let's get to the bottom of this. And
it wasn't, I pulled you over because you looked distressed. It's, I'm pulling you over, I'm trying to figure out what I can get you for.
Right. Or he thought, let's give him the benefit of that. Or he thought I was somebody else or did something, or, you know, I was the guy that they were looking for something. I don't know. So then he's like, all right, get out of the car. I'm like, get out of the car? Like, for what? And he still hadn't really told me what I'd done yet. And somewhere along that conversation, this part's a little funny. Somewhere along the conversation, it was like, yeah, you know, you were driving too long with your high beams on or something. I'm like, oh boy, okay. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's the case, that should be a 3-second warning. Like, hey, just turn your high beams off. You know, next time I don't, you know, just be careful, more aware. Boom, see, be on your way. Or, hey, you had your high beams on. I'm going to write you the $25 ticket or whatever it is. Give me a second. And then, yeah, okay, well, what a jerk. I got a ticket. Okay, I pay it. But he gets me out of the car, so immediately you start, like, you just shaky, just kind of panicky, you know, like, he's like, oh, what's the matter, you panicky, like, very, like, aggressive, like, what are you upset, like, he's like, all right, I'm going to search you, turn around, put your hands on the, I had a Jeep Wrangler at the time, and I was on the hood of the car, I'm like, geez, I remember having cargo shorts on, because that's what was it, that was the big style back then. And he's like, all right, I'm going to search you. You don't have any guns or weapons or anything that'll hurt me, right? You got nothing here. No guns, no weapons. I'm like, dude, no. And he's just like, taking like a long time searching each pocket, like being very like pushy and aggressive. And I just remember like being in full on like kind of panic, like cold sweat, you know, like really just like kind of like, oh man, this is like really invasive, like really aggressive, really invasive. And eventually it's just like, yeah, well, I guess you got nothing here. And he just like, he made some smart like comment, like, yeah. You know, you don't need to be around here anywhere. And he's like, next time you see me, I'm going to be, I think he said something really corny too. Like, next time you see me, I'm going to sharpen my pencil or something. Like he was going to write me a ticket. I'm like, oh my God. And I remember getting back in the car afterwards and just being like very shell-shocked, like very like jittery and like didn't even want to drive like any further. I needed like 10 minutes, but I mean, they're like waiting for you to take off and start driving. And I remember driving home like all scared, and I hadn't done anything. I wasn't drinking because I was going to somewhere. So I wasn't even there yet. It wasn't that late. It was probably like 8:30 or something like that at night. I wasn't speeding. I don't even really speed to begin with. So like I picture that feeling, and I don't know, it just came up after like reading these stories, and like I kind of posted about like something as small as that. You can imagine what African Americans or people of color who've seen this in your neighborhood, they're born through generations of being afraid of the cops, you know, being intimidated, hearing stories about people like themselves being killed and shot for reaching for their license, for reaching for a Snickers bar, for less than that, you know, like for a cop's poor judgment. And you hear that over and over. Can you imagine? I just imagine if I was a black man, what they must feel just being pulled over by the cops.
Well, I think, as far as like we've all been talking about better training and stuff like that, I think one thing the cops never understand, regardless of whether there's an actual fear of being killed or just the fear of, you know, not many people have a ton of money hanging around. So the second the cop pulls you over, you're nervous just because, oh crap, how much is this coming out of my wallet?
Yeah.
And which sounds.
No, I agree.
When I say that it's minuscule to, you know, people of color who are worried, my God, if I make a wrong move, I'm dead. But people are naturally nervous when a cop pulls you over. And it's so weird how a lot of them don't get that or just saying, well, I'm just doing my job. It's like, no, it's one thing if I'm doing like 70 in a 45 and you pull me over, it's like I'm nervous, but you know what, I kind of deserve this nervousness because I was reckless. But when you're just sitting there going, what the hell, what's going on, what did I do, blah blah blah, I mean, like a lot of times when they pull you over because you got like a blinker out or something like that,
yep,
9 times out of 10 the person doesn't know that. So again, they're like, why is this cop pulling me over? What's going on? What's happening? And stuff like that. So it's natural nervousness, and you never know how to react. And then when you add that attitude to it, it just intensifies it more. So you put yourself in a bad kind of a state of mind.
Yeah.
And then you got this little cocky SOB going. They just beg sometimes for a confrontation, unfortunately.
Yeah, like baiting, like waiting for me to do something. Like, there was a killing in Arizona, I think it was in 2016. The kid's name was Daniel Shaver. And, he was a white guy. This wasn't a black guy being killed. But it was George Floyd and this guy were probably the two worst killings, like straight up murders by police I've ever seen. This kid comes out of, they apparently saw like what they thought was guns in the windows of a hotel.
Oh, I remember this.
Oh story. My God. And they get the kid out of the hotel room, and he's in the hallway in his underwear. Like in his, there's nowhere to hide machine guns, you know? Like, yeah.
I think those were sports shorts that he had. Are you talking about the one who got killed?
Yeah. Well, he was sitting there in the hallway begging for his life, like, please don't shoot. And they're like, the guy's like, get your hands, like, where? Like, he was screaming at the guy. Now, Mike, I could have no gun. This is people go to boot camp, right? And they're screamed at by officers and sergeants and generals, and they're scared. and they don't have a weapon. This guy's got a machine gun to you, and you're just trying to get his, please don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me. I have no weapons. And he like flinches his hands because the guy's like making him try to get in a certain position, and he blows him away point blank.
Yeah, I remember that story. It was sports shorts because he was scared at the time, and the reason he kind of moved was it was like untied sports shorts, so his shorts were basically coming off, and natural reaction is, let me pull it up, and he got shot, and the cop had like a machine gun. Don't quote me on it. It was something automatic, but the point is more, again, if you realize a person has zero clue what the hell you're doing there, there has to be some thought to, all right, I have to put my shield down just a tiny bit.
What is the threat? What threat does this guy have? You know, like, what threat is he?
Or at the very least, you got to start with I'm pointing a gun at you because there's a suspicion of a gun in your room. You have to listen to me, because if you do not listen to me, this is going to happen. You have to literally lay it out. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to go, okay, I'm fine now, but.
Yeah. Ironically, I hear police sirens in the background of my.
I'm a man now, Scott. I heard what you said on the podcast. Got my pencil sharpened, waiting for you to come out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm back, baby. that was. And then it turned out that guy had a whole bunch of history of being like a lunatic and. You hear those cop sirens?
Uh-huh.
What are the odds of that? Oh, they're getting louder.
All right, we're going to get some ratings this week. Yes.
I better record this visually because this might get a little weirder. But like, and it turned out that guy had a history. He had like something like shoot first or something written on his gun. Like
I remember that.
But my whole point, like going back, is that if I can feel, okay, now I'm a big guy, you're a big guy, we could fend ourselves. Like, I'm a white guy, believe it or not, Berlew. So that I don't have a lot going against me as far as being, you know, vulnerable. Being profiled like a lot of African Americans are. And I felt that fear, and I still feel it when I talk about it right now, like kind of like an anger, you know, kind of pissed off. Now you multiply that by everyone in your community, everyone of your skin color, this happening to left and right, seeing people getting shot, seeing people in the media. Like, I don't understand how people can't try to take a step back and understand what's going on in this country. And yeah, the riots, yeah, they're terrible, you know, the looting and stuff, but things are changing. Like, there's things happening, like, things are being put through Congress, cops are being investigated and things, like, what they're doing is working.
Yeah,
to an extent.
I mean, where it boils down to, like, the biggest problem is when one of these things happens, it's immediately... the union is there to save the person. And yep. I'm not saying every time, because the person, what happened with Floyd, that guy, all four of them are in jail. But you see it time after time after time. It's like, oh, well, you're on leave with pay. And it's like, well wait, this person murdered, possibly can be found murdering somebody. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me they're getting a vacation out of this? I mean, it's so ridiculous. And I mean, it just keeps boiling over and boiling over. I kind of sat back and I said to myself, I think I finally get the OJ thing. After all these years, I'll still say to the end of time, that brother murdered two people. Mm-hmm. But I think after all these years, I finally sat back and said, holy crap, I understand.
Yeah,
I understand, even though he murdered somebody, the stuff the cops did and... like all evidence that they were
right. It was like a win, you know, like hey, we finally got one, you know. OJ, like in the black community, I'm sure I'm not going to speak for them, but I'm sure it represented all the ones that were wrongly convicted and beaten and abused, and the court systems were stacked against them. Like, wow, it represented like we got one, like we, you know, we won one. So. You know, I think we'll get, I'm sure you got stories too, and this is a good topic, but We're coming up on our guest, and I'm not only excited that it's guest time, but I happen to be very excited that this this next guest kind of came together, and it came together in a kind of strange way. I had emailed his company. I don't know, man. I'd have to look back to when I did. I'd say maybe 6 months ago, something like that. It's just, and you know, thought nothing of it. Did our normal reaching out to people that we'd love to talk to. And just like maybe 2 weeks ago, I get an email, and it's under the name Greatest Ever is the response. I'm like, I swear to God, I almost just deleted or like didn't read it because I'm, you know, you see that, you're just like, oh, that's some kind of spam or whatever.
Yeah, I don't remember sending you an email, but continue.
So I click on the thing, and it turns out to be the wife, Courtney, who's the wife of Kevin Eastman. Now, Kevin Eastman, I have to thank Kevin. He's, you know, a lot of this show is like a lot of us living, you know, kind of living back our childhood and finding people we like. You got to talk to the Dukes. Like, this is like very close to me, like kind of, because this was right in my wheelhouse was the Ninja Turtles. So Kevin Eastman guys, him and Peter Laird were creators of the Ninja Turtles. And when I was, you know, elementary school, was smack in the middle of Turtle Mania.
Absolutely.
The Turtle bed sheets, the Ninja Turtle toys, the video games on Nintendo, all these the movies were just, that was everything I bought. Like, my brother was a little bit more Ghostbusters, and I was from Ghostbusters, and then all out like Ninja Turtles. I had I had the pizza thrower, like, which was this I don't know if you remember the pizza thrower. This thing threw plastic pizza discs like very hard for a kid's toy. I had the blimp. I had crates and crates of toys, and it's cool because I still see my brother took the toys and he like gave them to his son, whatever, and he plays with them. So huge part of my childhood, and I guess a lot of boys and girls' childhoods in the 80s, 90s, like huge Ninja Turtle. Were you into the Turtles? Was that in your wheelhouse at all?
Yeah, that was definitely in my wheelhouse. I got into it when the cartoon series was out, the original one, the personalities that they had. I was a big Michelangelo mark on it. The movie that was like the greatest balance, like it wouldn't, they would probably make it an R nowadays, which is sad, but like that movie was just like such in the wheelhouse. There's no blood, but there's still crazy ninja action. The costumes were
awesome,
amazing. There's comedy, and there was still a little edge to it, you know, like Splinter was like still like, dang, you look at in the movie theaters, you're like, man, I'd be scared to go up against this guy.
Oh, and like when Splinter's chain, there's like real emotions in there, man. Like I think Ninja Turtles 1, we're not talking about Secret of the Ooze or Turtles in Time or whatever, but Ninja Turtles 1, I think, holds up amazingly. I think it's still a very good movie. Like, the pace of it is good. The soundtrack is good. The darkness of it is really awesome with the, you know, like the lightness of the turtles, but the darkness of like the city. And when Splinter is chained up, you know, and he's trapped and he's getting beat by Shredder, and you know, it's like pulls on the heartstrings. Or when Raphael is basically like dead in the bathtub, and Leonardo is just like leaning against the wall, depressed, and then Raph, you know, like, hey Leo, like I must have watched that movie 100 times, at least 100 times.
And I'm gonna say 2 was pretty decent. Like, yes, they toned it down a bit, which
a little cheesier.
Like, everybody remembers the ninja rap, but I think as a movie as a whole, it was pretty damn decent. Yeah, third one, yeah, when nobody talks about the third one. Nobody gives that credit for anything. Across the board with story, costumes, we all understand. But I would definitely say they were a good chunk of the heart of my childhood, those guys.
I remember, and we'll get to this interview in just a second, I remember my aunt watched me for the day, and I was probably 5 or 6 years old, maybe. And we were in Bayonne, New Jersey, where most of my family lived at the time. And I remember this very clearly, going to like a bodega or like a little grocery, you know, like a little shop, and getting the Ninja Turtles, one a comic, and I just looked it up right before we started get on the air, and I looked up Ninja Turtles comic yellow cover, and that was it, like, brought back a flood of memories just seeing the cover. And this is when it was like black and white, and they all wore they all had red masks, like before the cartoon. Yeah,
the old school.
Yep. Yeah. And I found it. It was book 26, and I'm looking at the date now. It's October 1989, and I just remember flipping through that book, and me and my cousin Kara just loving the Ninja Turtles, and everything was turtle. Like, so it's really, I'm really excited to talk to Kevin Eastman here. So it's a real honor, and let's get Kevin Eastman on the line.
Let's do it.
Hey guys!
Sorry hey,
happy Saturday! Thanks for waiting.
Yeah. Kevin, how are you? First off, thank you for taking the time to give us a few minutes here. It really is a it's an honor.
No, my pleasure. All my pleasure, John. No worries. Thanks.
So, Kevin, I'm Scott, and that's Mike there on the other side there.
Evening, Kevin.
How are you?
So I gotta say, Kevin. Well. Like, Ninja Turtles was my wheelhouse as a kid. I was, you know, every one of my friends, we had that one pair of Ninja Turtles bed sheets that I think every kid in America had at one point. And right before this interview, I was looking up, I remember I looked up Ninja Turtles comic yellow cover, because I remember that was the book my aunt bought me in Bayonne, New Jersey when she was babysitting me. And I just pulled it up. It was book number 26. So it's pretty cool to kind of come full circle and be able to talk to you. So I guess my first question to you is, when you and Peter were creating these characters, like the first time, did you guys ever incorporate like yourselves in these characters? Is there like one turtle that you guys like identify with?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because you, and good question. No, it's because you draw inspiration from a lot of different characters, like, icons, pop culture stuff, friends that you went to high school with, and even yourself. So there's always like, you know, great example is when Peter and I traded Casey Jones, when I would write him, I was started the, you know, he was traded in 85, and in 86, Big Trouble in Little China came out, and I always thought that, you know, Jack Burton was the perfect Casey Jones
right
kind of attitude kind of guy. So every time I wrote, you know, Casey Jones, I was thought of, you know, Kurt Russell as Jack Burton. Whenever I write a work on Donatello, I always think of Peter Laird, because Peter's, you know, he's one of those guys that's the most techno-geeky guy I've ever met in my life. He was the first one to get, you know, the Commodore 64 computer and those kinds of things. But then a guy I went to high school with, actually he was an employee at Mirage for a while, a very talented artist, a guy named Steve Levine, who used to do lettering and all kinds of different artwork and stuff. But he was our high school's Robin Williams. You know, he was always the guy that took every joke and every, you know, silly
ran
concept,
with it,
you know, 10 times. Yeah, ran with it, you know, 10 miles too far, and it was fantastic. So you know, for myself, I guess I'd lean towards Raphael, only because I can be pretty passionate about stuff, and then, you know, I just like that Raphael's attitude, where you can sort of go anywhere and do anything, and you can push that character into a lot of different ways and story ideas. So I relate to him in a lot of ways.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Now, it's well documented the struggles you and Peter had in balancing the art of the comic with the Turtles' enormous growth and popularity and licensing. Was there ever a thought to pushing more towards developing a new series with stories and characters that would give you back the full control of creating your visions and just allow the Turtles to kind of go on with less input?
Well, that was, you know, we were very, it was very complicated, as you just outlined, but because it was one of those things that, it's like, be careful what you wish for in some cases. But, you know, in this case, it was just so many blessings and so many things that, you know, for example, you know, we were huge fans of Jack Kirby.
Right.
Jack Kirby, and a lot of those artists didn't really get to control their creations. The companies controlled them, and they didn't get the profit from them, the success of the character. So we felt we were an exceptionally, unique and amazing position with the Turtles, that we had full control, and we could enjoy the fruits of the labors and the success. But it was a tremendously intense schedule. And again, I don't want it to sound like we're complaining at all. But it was a period of time where, you know, we get into it to be writers and artists, and we ended up, you know, controlling our characters, and that took a lot of time. But I think that, you know, it was always each year that its success continued was probably amazing more to us than anybody else, because we always thought, like, well, this is going to be one of those things that might go a year, maybe 2 years, and then, you know, we're going to be creating something else and onto something else. And it just kept going and going. And again, you know, this is not a complaint, but it was one of those that we just said, well, it's going to be over next year anyway.
So yeah.
Some other thing. I've been saying it for 36 years. So I think that, you know, for myself, you know, I've worked on other, you know, I bought Heavy Metal Magazine many moons ago, and I've worked on different kinds of stories with, you know, other creators like Simon Bisley and stuff. So I've done a variety of different things, never anything even remotely, and would never expect to anything to the heights of what the Turtles accomplished. But it was just sort of, you got to keep feeding that creative need, you know, you got to explore, try new things, and
right,
bring those ideas back to your original characters. So,
yeah. Well, like, you know, you say, like, you never imagined lasting this long. I have, you know, nieces and nephews that are playing with my turtle toy. It's, you know, it's really cool, really cool to see. And, like, you know, I see you on, you know, I watched the Toys That Made Us episode where you and Peter get back together, you know, and work and meet. And then I find out you guys are reuniting for a new story, the Last Ronin, or the project. I think it's coming out in August. I might be mistaken. But can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, it's funny because anybody that's seen the Toys That Made Us, I would highly recommend seeing a documentary called Turtle Power.
Okay.
Because Turtle Power is a documentary that these guys, two wonderful filmmakers from Canada, spent 5 years and their own money, you know, and created a beautifully factually correct and awesome documentary, which came out in 2015. What's funny is, you know, Pete and I, you know, there might have been small gaps in our communication, but never, you know, just because we were both busy. But we did the 30th anniversary signings, and we did the promotion around this video coming back out. We were interviewed together for the video.
Right.
So just, you know, 4 years prior to the Toys That Made Us, that made it sound like we hadn't seen each other in years.
Right.
Was kind of a bummer, because it was very misleading and so many factually incorrect things. I mean, I always bring this up, which kind of sums up the entire Toys That Made Us documentary, is the opening line is, Kevin Eastman, born in Springvale, Maine. I was not born in Springvale, Maine. I do not know where Springvale, Maine is. I've never been there. So that sort of tees it up and gives you an idea of, you know, where it went wrong. But the most important thing is, although Pete and I have talked many times about working together, it just is one of those, he's more retired and wants to remain retired. And when I discovered and rediscovered, you know, 10 years ago, or so, I keep everything, you know, archived, and I stumbled across a story that we wrote in 1987. Like I said, I think I found it 10 years ago, and I just said, well, you know, we wrote this in 1987. It was set 30 years in the future, which, well, it would have been 2017. And so I approached Pete and said, hey, let's, you know, this could be something we could, you know, if you're not up for writing and drawing and doing all that like we did in the past, I'd love any and all contributions, because it's a complete story. It's a beginning, middle, and end. And he thought about it for a while and just said, you know, I'm happy with you and Tom Waltz just adapting it and doing what you want. I just really don't have the juice to get back into it. He wants to stay retired, but it is a story that's going to be 40-page books, so 200 pages. It's kind of a little Dark Knight sort of influence, and the way it was written back then and the way that Tom and I are adapting it. So it's sort of set in the future. We're not, you know, roughly 20 years from today, but it is again based on a story that, you know, both Peter and I wrote in 1987. So I think a lot of fans are going to really dig it. And, you know, we stay faithful to the core and some of the structures of the ideas that were done in 87. We just put a lot more into it to make it a bit more of an epic. So,
awesome.
But it's supposed to come out in August. We're having some artistic delays, but we're making adjustments on that. just you know, between all that's going on in the universe, sometimes it's hard for people to focus. Yep. But we're getting it on track, and so we are looking for a
we'll see it soon, bi-monthly.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. Now, have you found creating new characters as natural as when you just doodled the turtles, or do you find yourself saying afterwards, "Wow, there's a lot of thinking that goes into this comic book creating thing"?
Oh my goodness, yes, and especially these days, and it's interesting. Some of the ideas that I'm working on now, which are you know, I've got a couple kids projects, and I've got a couple sci-fi projects actually, and some other things I'm doing. I've got a Civil War story that I wrote, but a lot of stuff that I developed 15, 20 years ago, and have continued to evolve those ideas. So, and the point being, which is I find interesting when people said, "Oh, well, you created shows, you just create something new, something fresh," and you go, "Well, you've got like billions of people in the world that are equally creative, incredibly talented, and we're all looking for original ideas." Well, it's hard to have any kind of an original idea. So you just have to be more thoughtful about your approach that, you know, cause there's been so much between video games and movies and, you know, just how many comic books there are, not only in the United States, but in, you know, manga and European, comics of all kinds. So you really do have to be more thoughtful and really think about, digging deep and doing your research to sort of come up with something that is original, because it's not like, you know, Stan Lee saying to somebody, "Hey, I'm thinking of what if a guy got bit by a spider, he'd become like a Spider-Man," you know.
Yeah.
Come up with a story about a Spider-Man. So yeah, the times have changed. So, I love it. That's the fun part.
And so, now, Kevin, I know we're coming up on our time here, and once again, we really appreciate just hearing you talk and having a minute to talk to you. I guess I'll close with this question. Mike and I have been debating, having this pizza debate for the last 2 years about where we stand on pineapple on pizza. I'm all for it because I'm very, you know, progressive, and I march forward and I like to adapt. Mike is he's classic. He doesn't like anything on his pizza. He's a curmudgeon. Last question. Where do you stand on this, and where would the turtle stand metaphorically?
I love it. No, it's, you'll laugh because it's like, when I was growing up in Maine, the city I lived in, that was my after-school job. I worked in a pizza place. So we tried all kinds of crazy things on pizza. But I like, you know, good old-fashioned, you know, cheese pizza, three-meat pizza, like, you know, sausage, pepperoni, sometimes black olives. But, you know, our family favorite currently, it has been for a couple of years, is based on a pizza that my wife, Courtney, her dad, Greg, likes Hawaiian pizza with jalapenos on it.
Yes, I agree.
So, yeah. Mm. So if you put, you know, big slices of ham, some pineapples and jalapenos on it, it's a pretty sort of sweet and sour, funky sort of mix.
I knew you were a good guy, Kevin. I knew it.
No. Yeah. I will do the turtles butterscotch, fudge, and anchovy pizza before I do pineapple. Sorry. No, can't be done.
I feel like the turtles would be all open to it, to be honest. They eat anything, so.
Yeah, they do. You know, to me, it's like, you know, pizza-wise, I eat just about anything. But it's, but yeah, man, nothing like a good slice of cheese pizza done the right way.
Kevin,
all day long.
Thank you so much for giving us some time here. It's really cool to hear, like, you know, how much you still love it and the passion's still coming through. And it's amazing to see the turtles just consistently be recreated and redone and find new audiences. And like I said, I see my 5-6-year-old nephew. He's playing with all my old movie turtles, and then he's watching the new series. It's pretty amazing, and it's a testament to how you guys kept this thing alive. So thank you for your time today.
Appreciate it. Hey guys, look, it was great to talk to you, and then, you know, I gotta flip this right back on you guys, because it really is one of those things that, you know, I have the greatest fans, which gives me the greatest job in the universe. But it's something that, you know, puzzles me, and I'm forever grateful. Is, you know, it is, you know, you can, you know, even now, like this, when we had this next resurgence of the Turtles over the last 10 years, I feel like, you know, you can never tell a child what's cool. They decide, like we did when we were kids. And so the fact that there's young kids out there, young people discover the Turtles again and find it cool is just overwhelmingly, mind-blowingly awesome. And so it's sort of like the fans drive the Turtles' success, and it's just great to be here hanging out with y'all, still getting to do what I dreamed about doing when I was a child. I get up every day, and before I got on the call with you, I got on the call with you guys. I was working on the latest cover of Turtles issue 107. So there
that's
you
awesome.
Go. So
wow.
Thank you guys. Appreciate
Kevin,
it.
Kevin, thanks so
if
much.
If you just pencil us in, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't mind, just put us in the background waving to them. Yeah. If you don't mind, you know, it was a good interview.
Not at all. People would be like, who are those guys? Are they bad guys? Are they good guys? No, they're here for the pizza. So.
Yeah, that's fine.
Just put our Verbal Shenanigans t-shirts on. They'll figure it out, you know?
All right, Kevin Eastman, a childhood, I don't know, icon, I guess, if you will, or a very big influence, another one on the podcast. So it's another great
guest.
Imagine
how many, pretty much everybody in their mid-30s to probably up to, 50, just go up to them, thank you.
It must be cool to be responsible for creating something that's so in the lore of culture that even kids now, even if they're not into it, they know who the ninja, they're like, oh, those guys, I know them, you know, a little bit. Oh, you know, it's in the psyche of people. But
they kind of just always come back every 7-8 years and all with a new iteration of them. So
it's funny because I was just talking about this, you know, I told my brother and my cousin yesterday, I'm interviewing Kevin Eastman. We were talking about it, and they've changed looks so many times, and they've had the 3D animated shows, they've had different animated ones, they've had Netflix things, they've had the movies. It's pretty interesting how it keeps showing up, and it's almost like a Batman or something like that. It keeps finding new ways to be, brought to kids and to new audiences. And I got to say, Kevin Eastman kind of sold me on that, the new thing, the Last Ronin. Sounds pretty interesting. I kind of interested in maybe checking that out when it comes out in August, I think he said, August or the fall. So
if you're just tuning in, all we're doing is talk about authority figures. So we started with the cops, we went to Mutant Turtles, and we'll go back to cops.
Yeah, later. Yeah, well... I don't want to get too back deep into the comp thing, but I know you have a pretty interesting story, and we haven't told it in, I don't know,
well,
a couple of years,
right?
I might
hold off on the Burlew versus
the people versus Michael Burlew.
Thank you. That just because there was nothing really wrong with that. About the only thing that happened, just the quick summary is. I got pulled over because my license plate lights were out.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
And basically, I was honest with the cop. I said, I had a drink, but I haven't had a drink in probably 4 hours. They give me a test while it's freezing cold outside. Of course, they say, well, we got to bring you in. Cop was very nice. Had no problems with him. I even, as he was doing stuff, he said, can you take a step forward? I said, am I getting a... Are you... arresting me? He's like, yes. And I'm like, okay. And I cooperated. And the long story short was both their DUI testers were broken. I spent 3 hours in the back of a car going to different districts just because they didn't have a machine that worked.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous story.
But I had nothing bad about that cop. But I will kind of give you a quick two stories here. We got one story where the cop, kind of like yours, where the cop was being a little dickish, and one where a cop was very forgiving to me. They're both quick stories. So, yeah.
I mean, and again, before it goes into this, this is not all anti-cop. This is more kind of relating to what's going on and the feelings that people who are constantly, you know, oppressed and under the fear of cops feel. So
the good story was, I got
as good as you can get. I got pulled over by a cop, and when I get pulled over, I always try to make sure I have all three of my things, license, registration, insurance, right in my hand.
And your machine gun.
No, I'm not like that. But as I'm getting my license out, and I'm a little nervous, my hand's a little shaking, it falls out of my hand, and it perfectly went in between the console and the seat, where it went under my seat.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just a moment where I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So the cop comes up. I'm like, here's my registration and insurance. And I literally explained to him, that's where the license went. You tell me what to do.
Yeah, this is wise call. Yeah.
And
you know, you're like, lucky you even thought like that, because God knows, man. God only knows.
Yeah. So he said, go ahead. And I'm trying to reach under, and I don't have a good angle. And I even asked him, is it okay if I unbuckle my seatbelt and open the door just to get a better angle? He's like, go ahead and watching. And I did it. I got the information, gave it to him. And I mean, I forget if I got a ticket or not or whatever. The guy was nice, but that is a story of, I can only imagine if I was black and I said, hey, my license is under my seat.
Right.
What are the odds on him just saying, oh, yeah, go ahead, and so forth. So that was a good case scenario. So I'll give you the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts, of all things, I'm walking. The premise of this second story is I got pulled over walking. So I used to do...
I mean, I was juggling guns, but I don't understand what was wrong with that.
When I still lived in Jersey, like Saturdays and Sundays, I would just go for a walk.
Yeah.
And I lived right off of a highway, yeah, basically. So
up in Chester,
I would do,
right?
Like a... Flanders.
Flanders, yeah.
Yeah. And I would do like a good 5-6 mile walk just to get some exercise. And I went a little later, more than usual. It was later. It was probably about 8:30-ish, but you still got the glint of the sun going down, so it's not like pitch black or anything like that.
Right.
And as I'm done with my 5-6 mile walk, I'm coming back on the highway. As I'm walking one direction, I notice like blue and red lights behind me. So I'm turning around figuring, oh, cop pulled somebody over right where I'm at. As I turn around, there's literally a patrol car like 5 feet behind me.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, this is curious. And I walk up to the cop car, and he got out of the car and he swung it around. And he's like, what you doing? And I explain, oh, I do this walk, blah, 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 go around here. Say, okay, where are you going? I'm like literally going up the big hill to my apartment complex. I'm like, yeah, I just live right here. I'm just finishing up my walk here, whatever. Okay. You ever been arrested before? And I just start laughing my ass off in front of this cop.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
all I can think about is you are the biggest piece of whatever. And I literally said, officer, can I reach in my wallet and show you my license that shows I live here?
Yeah.
And he goes, okay. And as I'm reaching in, he's literally saying, I don't know what's so funny here. And I just start shaking my head. Give him my license.
And at the time, like when this is going on, you're probably like nervous / angry / on edge.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing. It, like I said, it's like at 8:30 at night on a Sunday. It's one thing to kind of go, hey, is everything okay? But like I said, when the third question is, you ever been arrested?
Mm-hmm.
With like nothing like, I'm carrying a gun or anything like that. That is literally his third question. That was just so off the wall. All I could do was laugh literally in his face. And then after.
Yeah. So I'm laughing because of just how ludicrous it is on the third question with not seeing anything to say, ask if I've ever been arrested before. So I give him my license. And he sees I'm living there, and he gives it back. And like I said, he's like, oh, all right, here you go. He's like, do you want me to give you a ride? I'm like, No, I don't want to hide in a car with you.
And how
I
dare you walk?
Off, so,
oh, you I just mean, you just walked off away from him.
Escalate more than that. Yeah, yeah, that was just I just went up the hill and went back into my apartment. But it was just funny. Like even where he stopped me, where I was at, was literally like I was probably like 5 steps onto the highway, and he wasn't coming back road. So he literally just sees me walking, and then immediately hits lights. So it's incredible.
Yeah, I've had a couple over the years of not nice, not great interactions. Always a superiority complex, and it's like, dude, like we pay your bills, like come on. So I get it from all angles, but I think it's like a time period where I really do think if people can stick to their guns and allow like people try to ignore like the people who are taking advantage of this kind of stuff and the people who are destroying things for no reason. I think if you could keep the message the right way and keep it going forward, I really think there could be some significant changes in at least policing anyway, at least as far as I mean, this is going to be, I mean, I know you say history books, but whatever history is on years from now, this year is going to be two major events that they're going to know about 50 years from now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, with any hope, it's going to be, I think it's to the point where we finally said, okay, the same thing's been happening hundreds of times and there's been no changes on either side. So you might want to buckle down and actually attempt a change for once. So
yeah.
What it's going to be, I'll leave it up to the smarter people, but something has to be done. I'm not going to rag on the cops. There's a ton of great cops out there, and I somewhat get their point where about, hey, don't all rag on us, but you got to admit, something's got to happen here. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and then you're going to have the 2020 election. It's going to be like one thing that causes controversy after the next biggest thing that's happened in years to the biggest bomb that's going to be, we might be two countries by next year. When we're doing the Verbies, when we're doing our best of show, we might be, Mike, you might, me and you might be in different countries.
Then at least we'll get a multicultural show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might have to change my phone plan. We might, to dial out to a different country. But I'd be like, let's go down the south. You know, maybe you'd be like Middle America because you already have a South America. So maybe you'd be like Central America. And I'd be North America.
That'd be great if they called the South South America, and then the actual South America sues for the rights.
It just keeps going down, you know. Dude, we're the real Antarctica, you know. I don't know, man. I just hope things work out the right way. And there's something, I can feel like normalcy is not even a thing anymore. It's just like a very strange time and world we're living in right now.
Yeah, I want to go back to being pissed off about baseball. I really do.
Let's talk about those losers real quick before we go. here's a sport that little kids don't care about, and pretty much the people keeping the sport alive are our age and older, because the sport does not really grab young audiences too much. It doesn't grab inner city audiences or urban audiences. And then you've had strikes along the way that have almost killed the sport. And here we are again. Cannot agree on how to play a couple games, because they need, it's billionaires versus millionaires.
It just boils down to, it's like, well, you got to take a pay cut. It's like, well, wait a minute, aren't you worth a billion times more than that? Well, yeah, but, you know, it's still my profit margin, and it's all endless. And then, I mean, hell, we're not even at the point where we're debating on stuff, because I remember there was stuff about they didn't know about showering. They didn't know if they were going to force a no-spitting rule. There's so many layers to this, and we can't get past the first layer. Can we just figure out what our schedule is?
Yeah.
And how much you're going to pay me?
The only team excited is the Marlins. They're like, we can't lose revenue this year. They're like, yeah, you're going to be playing in front of no fans. They're like, eh, well, no big deal. This is fine.
Used to that.
This is fine.
And they'll find a way to win another World Series where you're like, oh, my God, how are you going to sell it off worse than this year?
Speaking of that, like, I know we talked about the whole Confederate flag thing with NASCAR, but how has the coverage been with no fans? Good?
It's been good. Broadcasters, the guys in the booth will be in North Carolina in the actual TV studios, and they'll have like all the cameras. They'll have one person who's like a pit road reporter there for the race, and they'll have it set up where they'll have a mask on, they'll have their own microphone, they set up a boom mic for the driver to talk to, so they're keeping their distance. It's working really well. The race last night in Homestead, Miami, that had 5,000 fans in the stands, and they had them spread out. For what I understand, Talladega this Sunday will have a certain amount of fans. They're only allowing people who currently have tickets who live within like 100 miles of the vicinity to go there. So they are doing the due diligence of trying to get back to normalcy, and which is odd considering the biggest story is how they ripped the Confederate flag off of all the fans, and all of them are like, I'm never going to that race. It's like, well, we don't know when you're able to go to that race, but still.
I think that statement's going to bring in some new fans for real. I really think them like being a little progressive is going to bring in maybe some more progressive fans.
Well, you got to look at it where it boils down to when the sport is more open, then people in other communities start watching, then young kids at the age start saying, I think I want to do that. Then they start going to the go-karts. Then you're getting these new stars.
And what's the biggest sport knock as far as people who don't watch NASCAR? It's a sport for white hillbilly. If they can get rid of that image a little bit, they're going to attract a different type of fan, which is what they should want to do.
Absolutely.
It's what baseball struggles with, man. They can't get young kids that care. Me being a guy who's worked with young kids before, they don't care about baseball. They care about the stars in basketball, and they all pick like a football team, and it's not even a local football team. It could be anywhere. But baseball, they do not care about. They'll be like, oh, I like the Yankees, and like they know Aaron Judge. That's it.
Absolutely. You know? And another layer to what they're still keeping up NASCAR with the COVID thing. So their all-star race that they always have in Charlotte, North Carolina, Charlotte had an upbeat of COVID cases. They said, okay, all-star race is in Bristol, Tennessee now. They're actually looking at stuff, and they're changing on the fly.
That's great. I feel like NASCAR is a sport that could work perfectly fine without fans. I feel UFC has done a tremendous job with it. Golf can do a tremendous job with it. I've been watching some soccer games, some German soccer, and it's, you know, soccer, the fans are a huge part of it because it does add to that amazing soccer atmosphere, but it is pretty fun to just have the game back on. It gives you like a different look at it. Like, oh, you could hear them talking and how much how loud they are with each other and the way they are able to, you know, you kind of see the game almost like you're watching a scrimmage over at the park, but you're watching the best guys ever and hear them communicate. So I think there'll be some changes too. I think the NBA season is going to change permanently after this. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of sports that are doing the right thing and figuring it out and making moves that are going to be – I think some things are going to change. I like I was saying, I think basketball season is going to change. I think they're going to start on Christmas. I think that's going to be the opening day for basketball. Yeah. which also makes them compete less with football. It's less weeks going up against football, and it becomes the main. If you're a major sport, you're like, I'll rather compete with baseball than football. Like, and the NBA, the NBA now that can go maybe from December to like July rather than like, you know, and then maybe it also splits them off from hockey a little bit, so they lose some of that too, and they kind of become their own season. I could see it happening pretty easily, actually. But
yeah, you know, they're going to get it. I mean, nothing like an opening day where you know everybody's going to be in the house or somewhere that they're going to have the TV on, and that's going to be one of the biggest things. Yep. And they're just going to drive their popularity more. Baseball, you better get your stuff together. Or
you better figure it out.
I'm going to pick a South Korean baseball team. I'm looking at the list. the Kaiwoon Heroes, possibly. Hanwha Eagles.
Mm.
Now, what's really depressing me, the two coolest names are defunct teams. The Hyundai Unicorns or the Sangbang Wool Raiders. Why did those two have to leave? I would totally wear one of their jerseys.
Yeah, every time they score, Sangbang! You know, like...
Sangbang Wool!
But, yeah, baseball is just like, they're like finding ways to lose the game again. You know, another event for fans to be like, yeah, I don't care about these losers.
Absolutely not. We need more steroids to get them back excited again.
Real quick, did you watch the Roy Halladay documentary?
I got it on DVR. I'm going to definitely check it out. I saw like the Sports Center pieces talking about it. And it's so sad. I mean, it's a guy who could not get out of the spotlight, and he had to try to get adrenaline, and it's just such a goddamn shame. Such a great baseball player, a great guy, and his need for adrenaline killed him.
I remember when the Mets would play him, and I'd be like, well, I don't even know if I want to watch on Saturday because Halladay is pitching. So, and that's just when the Mets like couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag. I'm like, oh, Halladay's pitching. That's going to be eight innings of two-hit ball every single time that, you know, he goes out there. He was like one of the last of the workhorse, like seven, eight, nine innings every time out type of pitcher. And, it's just opiate addiction, man, is just so rampant among athletes. And I think I talked about it. I talked to a comedian, Gerard Herron, who was he used to be a minor league catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals, I believe. And he was talking about just, you know, like in the minor leagues especially, like you're basically auditioning every day, right? You're basically like, okay, here I am. So now, Mike, your shoulder starts barking, you know, and you're not an A-level prospect. You're like in the middle, and you might have a chance if everything breaks right. So now your shoulder's barking. Well, we got a little pill that'll take that pain away and get you up for the game, perform in the game. Boom. Okay. All right. When I'm not out there, now 2 o'clock comes around. Ooh, I got to get up and down for the game again, take the pill. And then you take a sleeping pill to take off the edge of the adrenaline rush and the cortisone and everything. And he says, just so rampant. And the greatest guys like just get hooked on it, addicted to it, and it's just all the way up through the majors. He's like, it's the thing that's not talked about enough. He's like, think about it. You got a 160 game slog every day. Get up, get ready for the green. This is why we've seen steroids and greenies and uppers and everything else in baseball, because it's the length of the season and it's competition, man. And when you're telling a young catcher, a young pitcher, hey, you get to that next zone, you're going to be making three, you know, six figures, and you'll be set for the next couple of years, whereas you could be down here in the minors making 40 grand or whatever it is. And I don't think you can tell any of us that we wouldn't take this stuff.
Oh, absolutely not. And going back to Roy, I mean, he was like a top five pitcher
for
8, 9, 10 years, and then when his back started hurting those last 2 years, I mean, not even as a Philly fan, like you can tell just looking at him on the mound, like it could not register, like with all the back pain,
yeah,
like nothing was working. He was he wasn't even good enough for the bullpen near the end, and it was just so sad how much a competitor he was, and you could tell he wanted to get that ring. He wanted to get in that spot, and it's
I always loved Roy Halladay a lot.
Ball right, man, and
yeah, I liked Roy Halladay a lot. He it was funny though. Remember how much he used to sweat, like how you know dripping sweat. They were saying that was a big side effect of all the pills he was on. Was a big side effect of profusely sweating all the time. So it was pretty interesting. That guy was struggling with that stuff for a lot longer than anybody knew. So check out that documentary. It's pretty good. I think it was called Imperfect.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
It was good. But Berlo, let's get out of here. It was a really awesome opportunity tonight to talk to Kevin and whatnot. So I know before this, we kind of went completely off the rails of what I was thinking about talking about. I was thinking about talking about like childhood toys and comics and bed sheets and things that we were into. But you know what?
Nope, straight depression.
Yeah,
good idea, Scott.
It still turned out to be a good episode. So, Berlo, anything to promote before we go? I mean, I know you got a marathon to talk about, but we're gonna wait. We're gonna wait 2 days.
We'll save that for next episode. But speaking of documentaries, I'll bring up Immortality or Bust, which airs on June 23rd on iTunes, Amazon Prime, Comcast, Verizon, Dish. This is the movie of Zoltan Isteman.
Oh, cool.
And his run for his presidency in 2016. For those of you who are not aware, Zoltan is a transhumanist who has been on our show 3 times. Last episode was episode 276. But he has run for president now technically twice. He ran in 2016 under his own party, Transhumanist Party, and he attempted to get the Republican nomination this year, but the movie Immortality or Bust is going to be talking about his campaign to be president and all his thoughts on transhumanism and how we can use technology to live longer and longer lives. He's a really interesting guy, so yeah, I highly recommend it. June 23rd, it'll be out, called Immortality or Bust.
All right, and I'll just quickly promote. I feel like since restaurants are opening up here in Jersey, well, as we're recording this right now, on the 15th, so I got to promote our friends at Tap House 15. Picture came up today. It was 3 months since I did my last comedy gig. It makes me miss the comedy nights at Tap House over there, but they're just a really good business. They've been really supportive of the show. They've gotten us guests before. Oh, and that's what I wanted to say, too. I forgot. Jim Miller, who this is a whole time, Jim Miller, who we UFC fighter, who we did an interview for at Tap House 15 because they known him, and he's a Sparta resident over there. And Jim Miller is fighting this Saturday on the UFC fight night on ESPN. So our boy Jim fighting again. That guy likes to fight. is I don't even know what number. That's got to be like 40 fights for him. But so, yeah, they're great people over there. They just opened up. They got outdoor seating in 2 different sections. So excited to get back there. And go check out Jim Miller, too. He's root for him on Saturday. Put money on him. He's going to win. but other than that, today was another guest to put on the old resume, if you will, Berlo. It was a really, really... really good time. So other than that, guys, that's it. Listen to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating, maybe 4 stars if you don't like us. That's fine. Leave us a review and interact with us. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We've been getting a lot of good followers lately. Look out for our T-shirt giveaway post. We're going to do this for the next couple guests. That's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Good night, everybody.